Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Hornsby, and today we're going to talk about married filing separate and the bonanza that is about to occur. I've got a big announcement first before I jump into that. So the thing that I wanted to share with you is that Student Loan Planner will be getting into the tax planning and preparation business. So this is a really big move for us. This is something that I resisted for a long time, but with all the changes with married filing separate and how that's going to impact people's student loans, we really think that the savings are just too big to ignore. Let me give you a couple examples as to this, and then let me explain a little bit more of why are we getting into this? What are we doing? Student Loan Planner itself is one company. We have a sister company called SLP Wealth. So SLP Wealth is majority owned by me. Student Loan Planner is wholly owned by me. We have partners now in SLP Wealth, which is a financial planning and tax company. SLP Wealth is a SEC registered investment advisor. I'll talk about that more in a little bit. Why does that impact you and your taxes? So just to let you know, the top of today's episode, I just wanted to share that there is a deadline before we're going to start charging enrollment fees for people that want us to do their taxes for this upcoming 2023 tax year that's filed in 2024. The way it works is essentially you have to join SLP Wealth as a financial planning client, and then you can optionally add tax planning and prep services on top of that. We'll talk more about that at the end of today's episode, but just know that if you want to sign up for this tax services stuff that we're going to talk about and that will help actually do all the stuff we're going to talk about in today's episode, then you have to go to slpwealth.com/book. So that's slpwealth.com/book. Essentially, you'll sign up for an onboarding meeting for financial planning, and then you'll be asked to fill out a form similar to our consult form. And then in that consult form, it'll say, you know, do you want to add tax? And so if you say yes to that, then it's going to take you to that tax agreement and you'll be all set for tax year 2023. And I'll talk about pricing, details, who's that for, et cetera, when I get into the end of today's episode. But I wanted to jump right in to talking about the married filing separate bonanza that is going to occur in this coming tax season. So we did a survey. It's a pretty interesting survey. We had 5,000 people take it, and about two-thirds of our married clients said that they were going to file married filing jointly for tax year 2023. But we think that this is because of lack of awareness of a lot of the changes with the SAVE plan and the new IRS automatic data sharing with the Department of Education. About 9 million people in the past did income-driven repayment. The reality is with the new SAVE plan in place, a whole lot of people that are on IDR are not going to be paying their loans off anymore. So that means that people are going to be carrying their loans with them until either getting, you know, PSLF forgiveness after 10 years or getting the 20 or 25 year IDR forgiveness. And still more people are going to hold their loans in the federal system for an extended period of time just because of the interest subsidies that they could get. So let's talk about married filing separate as a tax status. So about 3.9 million people filed taxes separately in 2020, according to the Wall Street Journal. And a lot of that is coming from a variety of different things. It was some pandemic unemployment benefits that you could get bigger numbers on if you filed separately. But a big chunk of that is student loans. In the past, about 25% of student loan borrowers were on an income-driven repayment plan, about a quarter. We think with all the, you know, hard push to get people onto the income-driven repayment plans, that that's probably going to jump up to half. So we're probably going to see something like half of borrowers end up on an income-driven repayment plan. That could mean about 20 million borrowers being on an IDR plan. So if you see the same number of people file separately as currently do, then we might be looking at maybe around 8 million people filing taxes separately. So this is going to jump up a whole lot. Why would so many people file separately? What's going on exactly with the SAVE plan? How does it compare to the past? So the SAVE plan is replacing Repay, revised pay as you earn. Repay, if you recall, required you to file jointly regardless. So you had to file jointly for taxes. There was no way around that. But with the SAVE plan, you're combining a lot of the stuff of the interest subsidies with lower payments for a lot of people, and you're allowing people to do married filing separately. That's really interesting combination, right? So compare this to somebody who only had access to income-based repayment, or they could do repay. Those are their two choices because they had loans from before 2007, let's say. So, you know, you went from paying 15% of your income to and no interest subsidy with 150% of the poverty line deduction to 225% of the poverty line, a weighted average of 5 to 10%, depending on how much of your debt's up from undergrad versus grad school, and you get interest subsidies on top of it. Whereas the repay plan required you to file taxes jointly and didn't give you the same ability to get a lower payment by filing separately. So in other words, the SAVE plan is going to drastically increase the number of people who are incentivized to file married filings separately. Now, what about the problems with married filing separately? We'll talk more about that in a second, but filing separately generally creates higher tax costs. So what that does is it raises the need for somebody to look at your student loans and your taxes and figure out, is the savings in the student loan side of things better than filing jointly and saving a little extra money on your taxes? So it's not just going to be married filing separately, though. There's some other things out there that you need to be aware of. One thing that's going to happen with this new IRS data sharing feature is they're going to look a lot more based off of what's on your IRS returns to calculate your student loan payments. So, for example, we think that what that means is if someone simply files an extension, which you're allowed to do legally, they're going to go pull the most recent tax return, which probably would be for the prior tax year. So how could this save somebody who's got an income that's rapidly increasing? How could that save someone money? So let's say you've got a physician who just finished training, is an attending. Let's say your certification date's in July every year. You file for an extension. That would push your tax filing date back to October. That would probably, if you're having automatic data sharing with the IRS, allow you to use that tax year when you were making $60,000 a year, potentially for a whole extra year. There's other stuff like dependents, claiming dependents. If you put all the dependents on the person who needs the forgiveness the most in a married couple, then that probably allows you to more easily claim the maximum family size. If you instead split the dependents, which is probably what most tax preparers would do, then you could end up paying an extra $100 a month per dependent that you don't put on the right tax return. For people that need to file separately when they file jointly instead, because the tax person puts it as joint, that could cost you easily thousands of dollars a year, maybe several thousand dollars a year. There's also problems for community property borrowers. So community property borrowers, there's nine of them, or nine states that are community property. Let me see if I can name them off the top of my head. I probably will miss several. But Arizona, California, Louisiana, Texas, New Mexico, Nevada, I think Idaho, Wisconsin, and Washington State. I'm probably missing at least one there, but there's nine of them total. And then these community property states, this is a fun fact of history, most of them used to be a part of Mexico. Mexico had Spanish civil law instead of English civil law, and Spanish civil law gave a lot more rights to women than English civil law. So because of that, when a lot of these states, you know, joined the United States after the Mexican-American War in the 1840s, they basically still had their Spanish civil law, and so they just sort of kept their community property type rules in their code and made it a lot more, essentially, it comes from just having two separate countries' civil codes being in place. These community property states, it's essentially like draw a line from New Orleans to LA, and all the states on that line are community property states. Now draw a line from LA to Seattle, and all those states are community property states besides Oregon. So Oregon's not. And then Wisconsin is randomly a community property state because I have no idea. There's like a French fur trapper tradition there, so maybe that's the reason, but that's just the weird one. It's community property for a reason that I don't know. So anyways, community property borrowers that are married, a lot of those borrowers did not think that they needed to file separately, which again is probably not correct, because with community property borrowers, there's a lot you can do. You can file separately and split the income 50-50, and so if you're the greater income earner, then that can lower your payment significantly if you provide automatic data sharing authorization to the IRS. But you also have to file a form called 8958 that splits that income evenly that allows you to claim the lower income. Now, on the flip side, if you're the lower earner in a community property state, doing tax returns can make you pay more than you need to. So what you could do instead is you could do married filing separately, split the income, then use alternative documentation of income and not provide authorization to the IRS to certify. And that would give you a much lower payment on your student loans. Now, we've run into many, many dozens of CPAs through the years. Their clients will forward our recommendations to their CPA, and the CPA uses whatever the oldest software out there to do taxes is, and that CPA will essentially not understand married filing separately because they never need to do it really for a tax purpose. There's not much of a tax reason to do married filing separately. A lot of these older softwares do not handle edge cases very well, in particular, something like Form 8958 that splits the income 50-50. It's just not super common And so, you know, situations that are not super common that don't benefit very high income earners, tax software tends to not care about that too much because that's not where the tax software is trying to make their big sale, right? They're trying to, you know, use it to help people attract millionaires that want to pay $50,000 a year for tax planning. We've seen a lot of people get their returns filed the wrong way. Just because somebody's a CPA or a tax preparer and has been in the business a long time, it doesn't mean they know anything about student loans. And very commonly they don't. We've even seen cases where borrowers will tell their tax person, hey, make sure that you file separately for me. And they'll say, okay. And they file joint. Why? Because again, there's no tax reason to file separately. So generally most of these tax firms will just file people joint, or they won't put the dependents in the right place, or they won't do any tax planning, or they won't have thoughts on ways that you could reduce your taxable income and your AGI. And we just thought, this should be better than this. The industry doesn't need to be this difficult and disjointed when it comes to student loan borrowers looking for competent tax help. There's going to be divergence of loan strategies in a big way, I think, going forward for married couples. You know, it used to be that you could do a lot of different things to get people both going towards forgiveness, even if one spouse had low debt and the other spouse had high debt. I do think with these new rules, it's going to increase the payoff for one spouse to go for forgiveness and the other spouse to pay off their loans. Just because if you look at the way they're going to count family size, initially, we thought that they were going to essentially let both spouses claim the kids and get a bigger deduction. And so that would have incentivized filing separately just for that purpose alone. But it seems like that's not going to be the case. It seems like they're going to really try to go mostly off of the IRS definition of dependents. And they're probably going to try to mostly just pull information from IRS tax returns to determine what someone's dependent count is. Like the main difference, the count for family size for student loans differs from the IRS definition is the IRS does not count a child on the way. The IRS only counts a child if the child is born, whereas the student loan family size counts a child if the child's on the way. That's like the primary difference that I'm aware of. And so they really do want to try to automate this as much as possible. So we think that they're going to mostly just pull data off of the tax return. So what does that mean? It means having your tax return and tax planning and AGI planning and your tax strategies integrated with your student loan strategies, that's more important than ever before. You know, why would you not just do this yourself, right, in TurboTax or something like that? Couple things. So anybody that lives in a community property state, which is about 30% of people, so that's California, Texas, Louisiana, Washington, Arizona, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Nevada, Idaho, those types of states really need, I think, help. Because if you try to do Form 8958 on your own, it can be tricky. It's kind of complicated. It's something that you could figure out, but you would want to be very cautious about doing that, I think. So if you're in a community property state, be cautious. If you need to file an extension, for example, you have income that's rapidly increasing over time, it doesn't take a whole lot of rising income to make that file an extension strategy worth it. So in other words, that strategy of instead of filing in April, you file for an extension in April, and then you file actually in October, depending on when your IDR recertification date is, that could save you as much as $2,000 a month, potentially, because you're just putting off that higher tax return being used on your student loans for a year. And then let's say you have rapidly increasing income, filing for an extension every single year might be a great idea because it's putting off your IDR payment being adjusted upwards with inflation level raises you get at work. So that's pretty valuable. Figuring out exactly what the best bang for the buck is in terms of who should claim a dependent, that's going to be a lot more valuable because they're trying to make sure that dependents are claimed on the people with student loans instead of just claiming it based off of solely taxes alone. And then there's also just like things that you lose with filing separately, but there's ways to get a lot of it back. So what I mean by that is if you file separately, you have to do a backdoor Roth IRA. You cannot do a front door Roth IRA. You kind of need coordination on how to do that. There's certain types of things that are cut in half, the capital loss write-off of $3,000 cut in half. But if you know what you're doing, you can possibly allocate that across two people and maybe not lose it. The tax software out there does a poor job of married filing separately analysis. And we think a whole lot more people are going to need to do it. We're going to have an episode next week that's going to talk a lot more about ways you could save five figures on taxes besides student loans, because we don't want to just be known for just knowing how to do student loan strategies and taxes. We want to be really all-encompassing in terms of our tax planning and our strategies. You know, things like Section 179 deduction, which is like writing off the cost of a vehicle if you own a business, stuff like bunching deductions. If you need to, you know, try to get more of your charity to be tax deductible, donor advised funds, if you're donating appreciated shares to security to write stuff off that way, write off your gains and your donation. Understanding the details about itemizing certain types of home and real estate expenses. There's really random rules. Won't apply to everybody, but will apply to some people, like renting out your home for 2 weeks a year, like writing off depreciation on your vehicle. There's a whole lot of different ones out there. I won't go into all of them, but there's just a lot of value, we think, to get into taxes in a deeper way. So I want to talk a little bit about, why are we doing this? Like, why are we getting into taxes? And what do we think the benefit is of doing this? In general, we think that if something is really student loan intensive and we could save people money doing it, and we think it'll be fun, then we like to do it. So that's our test, right? Can we do it better than anybody else? Do people really desperately need it? And will it be fun for us? For taxes, what we ended up doing is bringing on a CPA and her team. This team basically is two people that started off as student loan consultants, but essentially have tax credentials and decided to join our tax business. So that's how we're doing it right now. We've got Becca Baldoff, CPA, and then Rupa, who's an enrolled agent and CFP. So we've got that team. We've got also a specialist in physician taxes that's going to be helping us out. And we've got a support team around them to help tax season go smoothly. So this is a big undertaking. Let me explain why I'm talking about it now instead of right at tax season. So the way we are charging for this is we are going deep into the tax strategy part of things, and we are not a tax prep company, right? So that's the only way somebody can work with us on taxes is to also be working with us on financial planning. So you might say, why are you combining the both? Why not unbundle it, right? Why are you bundling both financial planning and tax planning and strategies together and having us do that instead of just filing my taxes for a few $100 or something like that? So the reason for that is we think that the prep business is not something that is going to add the value that we want to add. When you do prep, you're reactive. You're just doing essentially what happened that year. You're not reacting to proactive opportunities, right? You're not talking about ways people could lower their AGI. You're not talking about, you know, how do you better distribute your donations so that you can lower your taxes. You're not talking about like what types of retirement accounts could you set up to lower your AGI. Essentially, we're choosing to do this in a deep way versus the surface level way. And so what's going to happen is people who want to move forward with us are going to get one-stop shop help. They're going to get all their tax people talking to their financial planning people. That's going to be extremely valuable because you're not going to have to loop both people into meetings. You're not going to have to do a bunch of complex stuff like that. You're not going to have to forward all your student loan planner stuff to your CPA to try to understand it. We're going to already have a CPA and tax team who's trained in student loan stuff, who's aware of all these things already, who's also going to be able to provide really amazing like tax strategies, we think, in general too. If this is interesting to you, what's going to happen is November 15th, we're going to start charging a $495 setup fee, because it's basically the tax business combined with financial planning together is $198 a month for people who sign up from the podcast. So that's a special price for people that sign up from the podcast. There's no enrollment fee if you sign up before like November 15th. We'll say, I think November 15th is included. I think it is. If it's not, we'll just include it anyway. So if you sign up November 15th or before, then you can sign up for the financial planning service, which is profession specific, by the way, which is really cool. And you get the taxes too. And the way this works is if you go to slpwealth.com/book, slpwealth.com/book. So Sam Larry Page, like student loan planner, slpwealth.com/book. If you go there, what that's going to do is it's going to ask you your profession, and it's going to ask you if you're a business owner or not. And then that's going to direct you to the scheduler link. So that's going to schedule you with the financial planners on our team to get onboarded. So that's going to be your onboarding meeting, and it's going to send you a form to fill out. Then that form is, it takes maybe 10, 15 minutes to fill out, and it's going to ask you at the end of that form, essentially, do you want to add taxes? Yes, no, or maybe. So if you want tax help, you're going to want to answer yes to that, and that's going to redirect you to our tax agreement, which is one page. You just have to acknowledge some things and submit it, and that's it. So for you to not have to pay that $500 setup fee for for the tax services, if you want us to do your taxes, you have to sign up by November 15th. So I just wanted to be clear about that, because we're going to have a lot of people that are going to be procrastinators, and they're going to reach out in February, and we're going to have to charge them $500 in addition to that monthly fee. And the fee after, I think, February something becomes like $1,000. And why does it become that? We just want to make people realize that this is an annual service billed monthly. So because we're going to be looking at things like, do we file a 1040X to go from separate back to joint to get a refund on your money, right? We're going to be looking at strategy planning. We're going to be looking at things like trying to come up with proactive suggestions on things you might be able to do, like setting up a retirement account or doing an S corporation in your business or taking advantage of the qualified business income deduction or setting a reasonable wage that's a better wage so you can save on FICA tax if you're a business owner. We're going to be looking at Schedule C versus S corps versus just W-2 wages, single people versus married people. We'll be able to, and I'll, you know, every status in between. I'm really excited about this. This is going to be so valuable for the people that want this. And again, who would I really suggest sign up for this? Business owners definitely would. If you're a business owner, if you are 1099 contractor, you could save a lot of money on this through tax planning. So that would be very valuable. If you are really worried about your student loans with this IRS data sharing to make sure you're minimizing those, I would sign up if that's the case. If you want to make sure that you need to file separately the right way and you're concerned that you're not going to do it the best way if you do it yourself. And then people that live in community property states. So again, those are those 9 states, mostly on the Southwest and West Coast, excluding Oregon and then including Wisconsin, California, Texas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, Washington State, Idaho, Wisconsin. So those states, definitely I would work with us because of how confusing Form 8958 is. People are pretty, you know, sick to their stomach whenever they have to fill that out on their own. Again, why not split this out into 2 separate things? Because this is not just a tax prep thing, right? This is not pay $200 for somebody with very limited expertise and understanding to fill out your taxes. The reason is that person could make a mistake that costs you $20,000 in your student loans per year. And I'm not exaggerating. Now, it would probably be more likely that that cost would be, you know, a few thousand dollars in a mistake. And if you are, you know, a hardcore DIYer and you follow Reddit and our blogs and our podcasts to the letter, then maybe you can figure it out yourself fine. If you have an extremely simple situation and you both make the exact same income and you have no children and you make $50,000 each of W-2 income, then sure, maybe you can just use tax software and maybe that will work okay. But we really want to dive in deep because what we see in the tax industry is only people that make more than $500,000 a year get any real tax planning. And then everybody kind of below that income level just sort of gets steered into tax prep. And the tax prep is just sort of like, oh, what happened that year? It's an autopsy, right? It's a quote unquote tax autopsy where they just look and see what happened to you that year. Oh, let's write it down. That's not good. That's not what you want. I mean, I can tell you that I've saved an enormous amount of money getting tax planning, and I would have saved a lot of money in my past had I known that I needed it. But a lot of people don't know that you need it because you don't know deductions. For example, let's just say you're making $150,000 of 1099 income. If you file as a sole proprietor, you're going to have to pay about 15% of Medicare and Social Security taxes on that income. But if you set up yourself as an S corporation and you declare half of that income is wages and half of it is a profit, then the $75,000 is now exempt from Social Security and Medicare tax. So that savings would be about 15% times $75,000. I think it's about $11,000 off the top of my head. So you could save $11,000 just by setting up an S corp. And then on top of that, you could also probably look and see if you fall under the QBI limits, and you could probably save on qualified business income deduction too. That's a 20% deduction of off your profits. That expires in 2026, but right now it's a pretty sweet deal. And there's a lot of stuff too that you can do that's state specific. And so we've got a lot of software that helps us with this. But for example, you know, Tennessee charges a franchise tax on S corps, I believe, whereas, you know, other states do not. So that's also something that comes into play, is you might not only need state level or federal level tax planning, but you also might need state level tax planning. And you might need to know things like, does your state provide any 529 state income tax deduction? When I lived in Missouri, it did. North Carolina does not. So when I was in Missouri, I think I was getting like a $600 or $700 a year tax break because of the state level, because of the way the state calculated income tax stuff. So this is, you know, again, way more detailed than, you know, the person that works at some big brand name tax company that does not have any major tax credential and just is a preparer and does, you know, inputs the stuff into the software for you. That's not what we're going to be doing. We're going to be going deep, providing enormous value. And again, if you want to sign up without having to pay that $500 enrollment fee, the financial planning is normally more expensive, but for the podcast listeners, it's $99 and the tax strategies and planning is $99. So you put it together and that's where I get the $198 a month for the combined service. If you look out there, I would wager that maybe send me an email at help@studentloanplanner.com if you know of a place, because I'd love to see who they are. But I don't think there's any place out there that provides tax and financial planning for $198 a month. I don't think that they exist, especially profession-specific planning. And if they do, if there is a place out there that's cheaper, they're probably selling like whole life insurance, or they're probably selling annuities, or they're probably selling something that has like a 20%, or, you know, maybe not 20, but 10% or 15% commission that, you know, is sort of a loss leader for them to, you know, secretly reel you in for something else. So I think that, you know, you're going to get enormous value out of this. We already have, I think, 700 or 800 clients signed up for the financial planning service. And we only like sort of have soft launched it so far. And that's how many clients we have. It's one of the fastest growing investment companies, I think, or investment advisory companies out there, I think. So we would love for you to be a client. If you're already a client of SLP Wealth, all you have to do to sign up for the tax service is just send a message to your advisor. So just send a message to your advisor and just say, hey, I've listened to the podcast. I'd like to sign up for the tax deal. For if you're already a client, you're just adding $99 a month on top of that. And that's for personal rates. There is a slightly higher fee for, you know, S corporations, for anybody who needs that service, of course. So if you're already an SLP Wealth client, just reach out to your advisor and ask to add tax. And then if you are not an SLP Wealth client yet, what I would say is if you have significant student loans, you first need to get a student loan plan. So we are not going to throw that in there for this. So the student loan plan, that's studentloanplanner.com/book. Get your student loan plan first if you have any kind of significant student loan balance. So maybe it's, you know, going for the PSLF situation. Maybe it's IDR waiver. Maybe you need to figure out like what should my strategy be at all. That'll get you acquainted with us, so that you can feel confident moving forward for other services that we have. And if you're already a Student Loan Planner client, but you're not yet an SLP Wealth client, then I would just say make sure that you go to slpwealth.com/book and sign up for financial planning. And then when you fill out your form for your first meeting, you can also click add tax. And just again, make sure, because I don't want to charge somebody $500 that we don't need to, make sure you do that on or before November 15th if you want to sign up for the more affordable rate. We're real excited to save people money with this married filing separate bonanza. And we think a whole lot of firms are going to be caught really flat footed by this. So we would love to help you out and make tax something that does not stress you out anymore. slpwealth.com/book. And next week, we're going to be talking to our CPA, Becca Baldoff, about ways that you could save five figures in taxes, both on student loans and also just on tax savings in general. Thank you, everybody. slpwealth.com/book. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your week.